Louise Rafkin has a unique perspective on other people's private lives. For years, she's cleaned houses in the Cape Cod area, among other places, and is privy to the secrets and dramas that are normally hidden from public view. She knows when a couple she works for is having marital difficulties or when they have sex, how much money someone makes, who is dying, and who is on a diet. She writes in her book, Other People's Dirt, "I don't read diaries, but I do read clues. I see things and I hear things." Rafkin, who now teaches creative writing at Antioch University in Los Angeles, says she never set out to be a house cleaner. In fact, after getting her master's degree, she was determined to be a writer until she got a dose of reality, the difficulties of making a living on a writer's salary.
Everyone has a part-time job, I know, that's a writer, practically. And I can't spell, and I'm not a particularly good typist, so that was out. And I was in a situation where I had these skills. People kept wanting them. So there I was, in the houses alone, putting together stories in my head.
Well, you write about the fact that you grew up in a very neat house.
Yes.
That you're, I mean, really a neat house.
Yeah.
Describe it for us.
Well, my father sorted his golf balls. I didn't realize how odd that was until I sort of grew up and got out into the world. But he had, you know, he was an avid golfer, and he had them sorted by soil, degree of soil on them, or degree of mess up, or whatever they are in golf balls language. And there were, you know, sort of 12 little shoe boxes lined up. And my mother, you know, did the wash every day. She had a very particular regime about the house, which she still has.
Right. Was this one of those 50s-style houses?
Ranch house
families?
In California, three-bedroom, right. You know, the whole thing. My brother did the trash. I did the bathrooms, the gender-specific tasks that we were assigned.
One of your first jobs was cleaning villas in the French Riviera, part of a kind of a cleanup crew that would come in after rentals. Is there something cultural about dirt and cleanliness and neatness?
What I found over there? No, I actually say in the book that, you know, to echo Gertrude Stein, a toilet is a toilet is a toilet. You know, there's certain people that are certain ways, but I've cleaned in several countries on several continents, and it's basically the same work, you know. And I ended up in Japan in the book, and that was very interesting. I lived with the people who clean as a spiritual practice.
Yeah, tell us more about that, because I found that fascinating. Mm-hmm. I mean, really combining Zen philosophy and this idea of which actually made sense to me by the time I finished the chapter, but this idea of cleaning and the Zenness of it all.
Yeah, it was very challenging to me. I had thought, you know, myself quite evolved spiritually, and then I got to the point where these people, for their entire life, have no private money or things, and they give them their service as a way of being thankful for being alive. And it was founded on the basis of a businessman in the 20s who was very disgusted by capitalism, actually, and the amassing of things. So, you know, I was there the same week that a group of Mr. Donut workers were being trained in this humbling philosophy. They went out every day and knocked on doors and said, I'm here to serve you for the humble practice of toilet cleaning. And I was very moved by it, mm-hmm. but certainly challenged.
Were you humbled?
I was humbled one day, particularly when I had spent the entire day sweeping the forest outside the grounds of the compound, and felt sort of proud and accomplished about the day's work. But no one had seen my work that day. And it was sort of 5-6 o'clock, and the wind came up, and the whole place was decimated with leaves. And I just spontaneously burst into tears because I realized I was very attached to the idea of getting something, being a good girl, being a good Girl Scout, getting a big check, whatever it was.
The pat on the head.
Yeah, and no one had seen it. And you know, I thought, this is what these people do their entire life. Mm. No one sees it. They're very humble people.
Could you translate that humility to this country when you were doing your work and feeling that sense of oneness, you know, that Zen sense of oneness with the toilet you're cleaning?
Well, I do get a particularly good sense of finishing a job and having a job well done. But I think what I translated, the most recent thing that happened to me is that I moved into a new neighborhood and someone across the street had moved in and had a new party and left all their trash on the street. And for about a day, I complained to all my friends about it. Oh, these new neighbors, they're going to leave all the chicken bones and, you know, I can't believe it. And then, you know, it suddenly flashed on me, my experience in Japan, and I got up the next day, went out in my pajamas, clean the thing up. It took 15 minutes. Mm. And I had this sense of, in this culture, we don't clean unless it's ours. You know, we just sweep it under the rug, or we complain, or we bury it in the Nevada desert, or we hope it goes away. But it's really hard to take responsibility for the world. And that's sort of where we are in a way, you know.
That's the difference, too, between service and servitude, because I think reading through this and as one thinks about someone that cleans one's house or another person's house, there's that awkward sense that you're the, you know, you're the owner and they are somehow serving you. But reading through this, it seems that many of the house cleaners don't have that attitude at all. And have their own sense of empowerment.
Exactly. I mean, I was very interested. I spent a month in New York cleaning up with different people from different cultures. And not only were they bankers and librarians in their own country before they were swept out of there, but they had a sense of, you know, I'm doing this and I feel okay about myself. And it, particularly the chapter that I interview a woman who cleaned up after the Kennedys and the Fricks and the Hearst, and 91 years old, spent her entire life in service to the big houses. She had actually adopted very upper class values as a way, I think, of buffering herself from that idea of I'm not someone and they are someone. She was very interesting.
Yeah, and I'm not here to serve you. I mean, I think people that wait on tables wrestle with this same relationship with someone where you're giving them something that they, in a sense, could get themselves if they were home, but somehow you're serving them.
Right, and also that they're invisible in a certain way. You know, there were a lot of cleaners who told me, you know, that was sort of the joke. All they know is my price and my phone number, and I know everything about them. So who's got the power in that relationship, you know? And it's upset people. There's a few people that have read my book and said, you know, I'm very upset about the idea that you had a job and you weren't supposed to talk. And I thought to myself, there's not a Hippocratic oath for cleaners, and I'm not really paid not to talk.
Right.
I mean, I don't feel like I was mean to anyone, but the idea that we don't see anything by virtue of $40 or $50 or $60 a week is not enough, you know.
The way you write about a house, you can literally walk into it and you know if it's a happy house, if someone has died, if there's some tragedy, if people are working on a divorce, it all seems to be right there.
It's very evident. In fact, one of the couples in my book got divorced over the course of me working with them, and it was very upsetting because you saw everything move from the shared bathroom and bedroom to the other bathroom and bedroom, and there was a little note by the door that said, "It's all yours." And, you know, the pictures started disappearing from the desktops of each other's on their desks. And, you know, it was sort of hard to go there because you saw it, you know.
Is there a part of the house you think that gives someone away, or a piece of furniture, or the way someone will pile their stuff on furniture that is most revealing about a person?
Well, I think there's certain sites. I don't think it's one, but there's the bathroom, the medicine cabinet, the bedside table, the refrigerator, and the reading matter. Of course, I always like to see what they're reading as a literature major. And I would talk to them about their books, but, you know, how many times? You'd go, oh, is it Danielle Steele? Or, oh, my gosh, they're reading the new Reynolds Prize. You know, it's like it's a
kindred spirit.
Yeah,
there, right?
Yeah. Then you'd be sort of excited.
Leave a note saying, don't forget to.
Yeah, or this is a really good one. This is my other favorite one. I would often leave literary recommendations.
Yeah. But did you like the invisibility? Because you also write about being in the house when the person who owns the house is there, and that awkwardness of perhaps breaking that invisibility, that they know you're there, you know they're there, and somehow the territory shifts.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's always easier not to have someone at home, I think. You know, even though you want to meet them. And several jobs that I had for maybe 8 years, I met the people 3 or 4 times over that time.
There was actually a moment, a really touching moment in your book when an older couple and the wife was ill and you and the husband made the bed together.
I know.
And it was really just a very sweet moment and a tender moment and also poignant because the enormity of what you both were dealing with, but specifically what he was dealing with.
I know there are some, I call them fairy tale moments in a house cleaner's life. There were some beautiful moments that I had with that one particularly, I mean, you don't find yourself making a bed with someone else's husband very often in your life and looking across the bed and realizing what's going on. And then there was, you know, a moment where I was side by side at the sink with a sort of a quite famous screenwriter, and he was all thrilled about, you know, getting the rust stains off his sink. And it was a great moment. Like, we were laughing, and there we were from quite different worlds, mm-hmm. and, you know, sharing this thing. So you have these fairy tale moments, I think, and they are quite sweet. And, you know, it's an intimate relationship.
Louise Rafkin writes and cleans houses in San Francisco. Her book is Other People's Dirt. This is Fresh Air.